Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Connecting Faith today. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls. And Ted, today we're going to be talking about social blunders, which sounds like Connecting Faith on a daily basis. No, not really. But we've all had the experience where we've hit send on social media and regretted it later. And that's what we're going to talk about today.
This will be a very helpful topic because it's so common.
Today on Connecting Faith, we are really honored to have Emerson Eggerichs back with us. Emerson is an internationally celebrated communications expert, speaking on the topic of male-female relationships. He's author of the bestseller, Love and Respect. That's a Book of the Year award winner. It's sold over 2 million copies. And he has an earned doctorate in child and family ecology with perspective that 20 years as a senior pastor in one of the nation's largest churches brings. He and his wife, Sarah, developed a Love and Respect Marriage Conference, which they present to live audiences all around the country. And he has written a new book that we're excited to get into because most of us, probably, if we have any connection with social media at all, have had this experience where we have sent a message and hit send and then regret it soon after that. And so hence the conversation ahead as we talk about Emerson's new book called Before You Hit Send, Preventing Headache and Heartache. And Emerson, first of all, welcome to Connecting Faith. Good to have you back.
Hey, thank you, Neil. I've been looking forward to it, and you're kind to invite me. Thank you.
We know you as a pastor and the leader of the Love and Respect Marriage Conferences. Is a book about how we handle social media kind of a departure for you, or are these really related?
No, that's a good question, and they are related in one sense. But really the driving force was my daughter, Joy, a young adult who saw me practice over the years. I always say it this way, I would have been a far worse communicator than I am had I not done the four things I talk about in this book. And since my 20s, when I was in college, I learned something that I really tried to apply as a quick checklist before I speak. This person said, that little thing in the back of your brain that tells you not to say something before you say it? Yeah, I don't have that little thing. And I think all of us can identify with that. It's the proverbial putting our foot in the mouth, and like you just began, we hit sin when we're angry or whatever, and then we live to regret what we said. And the book titled Before You Hit Sin is really kind of a metaphor, not just in the social media and World Wide Web, though HarperCollins asked me to do this because of the digital footprint that we're all leaving there. You can't push backspace on this stuff. You can't hit delete. It's not going to go away. It's out there somewhere. And people are learning that lesson, I think, very, very painfully. But my daughter, Joy, said, Dad, this is a communication issue. It's not just marriage, but I've seen you try to live this way. It's helped me. And so she said to HarperCollins, this is something that's in my dad's DNA. And she's kind of my manager type, agent. And so she said, I really think my dad needs to address this issue, especially with the worldwide web issues. And as I say, World Wide Web means it's worldwide, and social media means it's social.
Well, the statistics are pretty sobering, really. We send and receive between 16 and 120 text messages a day, 35 emails, receive 120 or so at work, and spend a good amount of our time just trying to manage all that. And before we dive in, are you surprised by the devolving level of discourse in our culture? Because it seems like we're unraveling pretty quickly in many ways.
Well, that is the concern I think almost all of us have. There is the studied observation that we are lacking civility in certain quarters. And not only are we lacking civility, there is this undercurrent of belief that I don't have to be civil with you. That if I don't agree with you, you don't deserve respect. You don't deserve to be treated with civility. I take the position that that will be short-lived. It goes against every bit of wisdom we've known down through the centuries. This is a unique, I think, period where we are in a culture that believes that you can lie, you can bully, you can pile on, you can be evasive on many fronts and somehow be successful. And I believe you can be short-term, But I do not believe with any ounce in my body that you can do that long term and maintain a great reputation and be credible and be influential. So the book revolves around that undercurrent belief. But I think we are up against the sentiment that, hey, I can say anything I want to you, particularly if you're in New York and I'm in California and I'll never see you, then on the social media front, I can kind of just pounce on you and believe there's no consequence to that. But you know what? They're now beginning to realize, and I've talked to I don't know how many business owners who say, you know what, we check first before we hire somebody. I said, no, what? Their Facebook. And that language that people are using reveals to the future employer whether or not they want to hire this person. So I think there's a wake-up call coming, and I think people are going to make some adjustments. And I want to encourage them to make those adjustments. They don't have to buy into this idea that I can be misleading or I can be rude and somehow achieve my objective. You know, you can be right but wrong at the top of your voice.
Talking about Emerson Eggerich's great new little book called Before You Hit Send, Preventing Headache and Heartache. And we're going to dive into some of those key ways in which we can do some prevention. But you're talking about from early on, we had, you know, some standards about communication things. And there were, you know, our moms used to say it. I guess, you know, we learned it in maybe kindergarten or so if we didn't hear it from our mom. But if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. Is that rule, should that still be in place today?
Well, that's Thumper, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it is, yes.
And it is a great piece of wisdom. And I there was that book written years ago, Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. And that is, I talk about that book in my introduction because really all of us have learned from our parents, think before you speak. We all know that. And we do. But when we're hurt, when we're offended, when we're angry, when people are stepping on our air hose, as I say, you know, we panic and we react and we defend ourselves. We want them to know they can't treat us this way. And but there is a price to pay that if someone treats me like they're a madman and I react to them like I'm a madman, then the people watching are only going to see me as a madman as well. I mean, it doesn't change that. I can't be crazy because you are. And so one of the challenges before us is to remind ourselves what maybe we knew years ago when we got into conflict with our neighbor. We're going to have to be looking at this person over the fence for the next 40 years because they live, you know, a stone's throw from me. And we've got to learn some kind of civility between each other. But I think these fundamentals have to be, you know, revisited. In fact, I have to revisit what I've written in this book every day. This isn't something that because you learned it when you were five that somehow you're going to continue to act on it. I know things that I don't do. I'm reminded of Vince Lombardi, the great football coach, Green Bay Packers, who realized, you know what, at the beginning of every season, I at the very first practice before the season launches, I need to go over the basics. And so the great story is that he would hold up a football in front of all the Green Bay Packers and say, gentlemen, this is a football. All right. You can't get much more basic. But in my mind's eye, Neil, I hear some big lineman, 6'10", 400 pounds, saying, hey, coach, can you go a little slower? And I feel like that lineman at times. And I just need to remind myself that I may think I get it, but I really don't get it to the extent that I do, especially when I'm angry.
Well, you were talking about, you know, Thumper and about five-year-olds, but there was another, you know, little saying that we had back in the day, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And clearly, I mean, you've discovered that through your love and respect teaching that obviously words do have the power to hurt as well as heal.
Well, many of our nursery rhymes are really kind of crazy, you know. When the cradle rocks, you know, the baby will fall, or ashes, ashes, we all fall down. You know, I don't know who is writing some of these things, but no wonder so many kids have problems. But I think the idea is, you know, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. That's just an absolute lie. I mean, Proverbs talks about that words are equal to poison. You know, the words that are not appropriate can just poison a person and poison relationships, and we all know that. But I think it's important for us not to maybe take up offense to the extent that we do with people who misspeak to us, that's for sure. But guarding our own mouth is well worth the effort, because once it goes out there, you can't hit backspace. And Christ himself said, every careless word I speak, I'll give an account for. the Lord that I love and the Lord that loves me says, Emerson, everything you're saying, every careless word, I'm listening to. And then he also said that the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. And I have been guilty too many times. You know, I justify myself. Let's say you and I were best buddies since boyhood. Well, the reason I said to you, Neil, what I said to you is because you made me so mad. Now, you didn't cause me to say what I said. You revealed the choice I made to say it. It's in my heart to say it. You didn't cause me to say it.
In a moment, we're going to talk about the four things that we must think through before communicating. It's revealed in Dr. Emerson Eggerich's new book called Before You Hit Send. We do have a couple of copies to give away. We'd love to have you sign up for that. We'll do an email drawing for this great resource. You can use social media. Go to the MyFaithRadio.com website. Click on the Connecting Faith show page. Use the email link there. Send us your contact information. We'll put you into the drawing for Emerson's new book, Before You Hit Send. That's MyFaithRadio.com. Click on Connecting Faith and send us a note. And we'll talk more with Dr. Emerson Eggerich, from the best-selling author of Love and Respect. He's a celebrated communications expert and has talked about male-female relationships for many years. He and his wife do the Love and Respect marriage conferences, which I highly recommend, and any of his books. But we're going to get to diving in a bit more on Before You Hit Send in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today on Connecting Faith. We've connected with Dr. Emerson Eggerich. You have heard him on Connecting Faith in times past. Appreciate his writings. The book Love and Respect is a Book of the Year award winner, sold over 2 million copies. Great teaching from Emerson. He's also written others about relationships, moms and sons. In fact, one of his recent ones. The new one that's just out is something that really gets to the heart of where many of us are living today. And the subtitle is Preventing Headache and Heartache, and hopefully that catches your attention. The book is called Before You Hit Send, and we're talking about how do we handle the reality of social media today. Well, let's talk about those four things we must think through before we communicate.
Well, I don't want to give away the book.
Okay.
But definitely there are
four.
Well,
give me two out of four, maybe.
Exactly. That's right. It serves as a checklist, and I can say these four things to myself before I'm about to write an email, before I'm about to say something, you know, on the phone or even face-to-face. I talk about face-to-face, voice-to-voice, or text-to-text, and those are the settings. And so it's not just the digital world, but it's also, you know, when I'm trying to just give information or when I'm trying to persuade someone or I'm trying to be affectionate. There are these dynamics that we need to understand, but these four concepts apply in every one of those. And if I just say to myself, hey, and the first one is this true? And, you know, the courts, Neil, have said, we must tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. And I don't know if you're like me, but years ago I thought, why? That's so redundant. I mean, why don't you just say, or do you promise to tell the truth? But the courts understood that there were nuances here, to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. In other words, you can say something that's true, but it's not the whole truth. So in the courts, did you stab that person in the shoulder? I did not stab them in the shoulder. I'm telling you the truth. I did not stab them in the shoulder. Well, did you shoot them in the shoulder? Well, I shot them in the shoulder. And so you can see very clearly there that what they said was true, but it wasn't the whole truth. And so the truth, it's not the whole truth, is misleading. And in fact, the courts say it's equal to a lie. And once I realized that, I thought, wow, you know, there's some subtleties here. And on this first one, what I do in the book is I explain why is it that goodwill people cross the line on speaking what is untrue. Most people are not chronic liars. We're just not. We're good-hearted, goodwill people. But for instance, a people pleaser, you know, a husband and his wife have decided to budget, you know, but he's in this tool shop and store, and he buys $300 worth of tools. And when he comes home, she said, what'd you do? He said, well, I bought some tools. Well, what'd you spend? Well, I spent $100. He spent $300, but he tells her $100. Why? Because he's a liar? No, he's a conflict avoider. He's a peacemaker. He doesn't want her to be mad, and he finds himself suddenly wanting to keep the peace, but he compromises the truth. And I talk about 20 ways that we all compromise. And here we are, good-willed, good-hearted individuals who get ourselves cornered at times, and we end up hedging on the truth. And that book that I've written explains in these four major categories why is it that we would not adhere to some of these. Another one is it kind? The second one. And this whole idea where I apply, is it loving and respectful? And, you know, many of us can get mean-spirited, we can get rude, but as I alluded to earlier, if you step on my toes, I have a tendency to push you away. And if you offend me, if you hurt me, if I'm afraid, if I'm angry, I will react because it's that defensiveness in me. But I can overreact, and I can end up being worse than what you were, but I don't see it because I'm feeling insecure. And so it's not that I'm mean-spirited, but I certainly come across in a very rude and angry way because I'm trying to protect my interest or how you've hurt me, and I want to stop you from hurting me more. So we end up violating what we know is the right thing to do. We don't do it because somehow we feel we're going to get a pass on this. And one of the points I make is we don't get passes. We end up undermining our credibility. We undermine our reputation. And people look at us in ways that, you know, we don't necessarily recognize that they're looking at. We did research on these four concepts, and each are distinct. They're very distinct. In other words, each are vital to good communication, like four legs on a table. And when we don't do one of them, the table is unstable. It will tilt. It will even collapse. And so, you know, I can be a very, very truthful person, for instance, but if I'm not kind in the way I deliver it, so that's why Paul said we speak the truth in love. If I speak the truth, but I don't come across as loving, people are not going to hear me. Or you know, I can be a very sweet, kind person, but like this husband, I hedge on the truth, and now it's not so much that, you know, I bought the tools that upsets my wife. She's wondering if I lack integrity.
It just seems like maybe the other side of that happens sometimes, too, where we, and I know you address it, you know, different phrases like, you know, the volcano, or we're rehashing, or there's TMI, too much information that we maybe are, especially when it comes to social media, it seems like we share too much.
Well, we certainly have. Exactly. I mean, I list out the various ways in which we might compromise one of these four things. And some of these things are just very innocent. You know, I talk about the chatterbox. I mean, you know, you're in an office setting, you got five people there, and this one person, they just talk all the time. But no one's listening because they're just filling in the silence. They just feel like they need to talk. But what happens over a period of time is no one listens to them. I've had people say to me that they're talking on the phone while they're thinking of something else. I mean, their mouth is moving, and it's just amazing how some people are just what we call motor mouths. They're talking all the time because they're afraid of silence. Now, that can be a very socially sensitive thing. It's good to have someone who, you know, wants everybody to feel comfortable. But that individual, and this is a little bit more of an innocent illustration, needs to realize, you know what, people aren't listening to you. They're just not paying, and is that the way you want to live your life? That no one really, at the end of the day, cares much about what you're saying. Their minds are elsewhere when you're talking. Now, that's a little bit different than a person who overtly lies or who is a volcano that you referenced, you know, and you see this happen where people just explode, and then they feel better after they've exploded, and yet everybody's sitting there with the shrapnel or the lava pouring all over them. And, you know, people say, well, I just got to be me, you know, I'm just going to die if I don't share what I'm feeling. Well, sharing what you're feeling is most appropriate, but it's this volcanic reaction, this outburst of anger that just destroys relationships. And what's amazing to me is people have lived this way for years and still don't recognize why it is that they don't have close relationships. And it's directly related to the fact that they come across in these very unkind, uncontrolled ways that undermines their credibility. And one of the challenges I extend is, how important are you as a person? How important is it to you to be a credible communicator? You know, one of the qualifications of an elder is to have a reputation with those outside the church. So we go to the counter at the store, and we're not getting served quickly, or someone steps in front of us, and we make a scene there. Well, then you've got three church members there. Then comes the vote for eldership. You're not going to get it, because they've observed you outside the church making, you know, really an embarrassing scene, and you undermine your credibility as a spiritual leader. it's little things like this that happen which really become symbolic of how we really are as a person, and it undermines our reputation with those outside the church. It undermines our credibility as a communicator within the church.
Been talking about some of the key principles of good communication, as Emerson Eggerich has spelled it out in his great new book called Before You Hit Send. You know, is it true? Is it kind? But talk about more about the relationship between truth and kindness. I'm just interested, you said, you know, people hear words but feel kindness. Say more.
Well, yeah, no, that's exactly the well said. The kindness element, this is why I think Paul says, speak the truth in love, that both have to be there. And that's why I say there are these four legs to the table. And we spent some significant dollars. We surveyed 1,250 people and found that these four ideas are, in fact, distinct in that, by we mean, when we rated these, you have a 10-point scale. We were at almost 9 points on each of these. In other words, these are separate entities, all of which have to be present when we communicate. So, you know, when people say, well, I'm just going to be frank, or I'm not going to lie to you, you know, I'm just blunt with people. Well, you're cruel. You know, it's a blunt force, you know, object that your words are. And so, you know, we justify our delivery based on the fact, I don't lie. I just tell the truth. And that's noble. There is so much nobility to being a person of integrity. I get that. But that's just half the equation in this instance. How does it feel to the other person? Do they really feel that you care about them? You know, we've heard through the years, people don't care what you know. They want to know that you care. And it's crucial that we come to that point where we realize, you know, my delivery system here needs to be bolstered up. We have an assessment tool that a person can access. It's in the appendix. And we go through 80 questions. And within that, there's a clustering. And we help a person see their strengths as a communicator, that they can keep moving forward. And sometimes people are doing things well, but they don't know why they're doing it well. And this will help them know why they do what they do so effectively. And it also help them help others who ask them, why is it you communicate so well? You can now capture in words what you do. But there's also the assessment of maybe what we need to shore up a little bit, because in this instance, you know, yeah, I'm a person of integrity. Yeah, check, 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 check. I speak the truth. I never lie. I tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. Yeah, but man, you are mean-spirited when you do it. You really don't care about the person. And so people are avoiding you not because they don't want to deal with the truth. You know, you can't handle the truth. You know, no, they can. They can't handle the fact that you have no love in your heart. There's no kindness. You're not a respectful individual. And so they're shutting down on you not because they're unteachable, but because you're so rude.
In the moments ahead, we're going to continue the conversation with Emerson Eggerich, who's written a brand new book called Before You Hit Send, Preventing Headache and Heartache. And we'll discuss more about the effective communication methods and what happens if we have sent something that we regret. Where does confessing come in? We'll get to all that and more in the moments ahead here on Connecting Faith. We have some copies of Emerson's book to give away. You can sign up for it by going to the website at myfaithradio.com and then click on Connecting Faith and send us your contact information on the email, and we'll get you in the drawing for that. Emerson Eggerich, guest today on Connecting Faith. Today on Connecting Faith, we're talking about the reality for many of us is that we haven't paused long enough before speaking or writing, and particularly related to social media, and we hit send and then are facing regrets. Well, Dr. Emerson Eggerich has done a bunch of research on this whole important area of communication and has written about it in a wonderful book called Before You Hit Send, Preventing Headache and Heartache. Emerson, of course, author of the best-selling book Love and Respect, and he and his wife Sarah have been sharing the Love and Respect marriage conferences around the country, around the world, helping thousands upon thousands of couples. And I know that if you've read his works, you have been encouraged by it. Emerson, we talked about, you know, some of these key areas. I'm wondering if, you know, part of it is, it seems like we're pretty easily offended today. So do we overreact? And I mean, should we just kind of let it go and not be bothered by what someone else may send our way?
No, I think that's an excellent observation. And I think all of us are concerned about the cry zones on academic campuses, you know, they call them the snowflakes, you know, that there is, and this is contrary to our American fiber. I don't think this is going to be lasting. Because you look at our movies, it's always the person of courage, the inner strength, that they're able to deal with things that are unjust, and they persevere. They don't. There's no crying in baseball. You know, that's the famous line. You know, that there is this vulnerability, victimization issue, and I think all of us have to ask ourselves, you know, how are we going to deal with these moments where someone says something to us that offends us or hurts us? And there's two ways of looking at it. They, in fact, are offensive, or we're taking up offense where we ought not to. You know, the Pharisees came to Jesus, or some representatives of the Pharisees, and they said to Jesus, "Did you not know that the Pharisees are offended by what you have said?" Well, now, Jesus Christ was sinless. So he did not offend them. In fact, the Pharisees had taken up offense inappropriately. It was their issue. And all of us are going to have to be honest with ourselves. Just because I feel offended doesn't mean the other person, in fact, was offensive. And part of the challenge as a Christ follower is that, you know, we mustn't be taking up offense where no offense was ever intended, or if the person said or did something, were they a person of goodwill? Did they really intend to be mean-spirited? You know, we have to use discernment in our communication, because some of us are becoming very offensive in response to the misleading statement that we were offended. And the Christ follower has to do it differently. We just have to be more mature at that level. But when we are, in fact, offended by someone, I talk in the book, how do you deal with people who are violating these four on the checklist? You know, we've talked about two of them. When a person isn't truthful with me, when a person isn't kind with me. And I talk about how to deal with people who may be lying to us, who are being rude to us. How do we deal with those individuals? So the book not only challenges me to say what's true, to say what's kind, but it also coaches us on how to deal with people who are untruthful and who are unkind. And I'm very excited about that portion of the book, because many of us, I think of a person like you as we were talking, you know, you've developed incredible skill as a communicator. You're thoughtful. You've practiced these things over the years. Many people think, well, it's just a natural gift. Well, some communication is a natural gift, but by and large, the word choice is always an internal issue. And there are people who can wax eloquent, but they drop curse words all the time, you know, because their hearts are not in the right place. And my challenge to people is to learn from people like you, Neil, who have learned how to operate this way, but then also, how do we deal with people in our lives who are not operating this way? And the book addresses that issue, and I'm very excited about that.
I know one of the things you address, too, and it's maybe a question we might have, is, well, I just won't respond. I'll just be silent. That's not always the right response either, is it?
No, that's a great observation. In fact, one person read the book and said, I thought you were just telling me when you titled a book before you hit send that the book was all about you telling me just to shut up. And as I read it, I realized you were telling me to speak up. And that's exactly right. What I want is all four of these things to be in line, and then we speak up. I dedicate the book to my two grandchildren, Jackson, who is six, and Ada Joy Marie, who is two. And she, you know, obviously can't read, and he can, but, you know, they aren't going to know this until years later. But I said, my name is Poppy, and I said, Poppy is telling you that if all four of these things are in the affirmative, speak up, speak up. So part of the challenge, to your point, Neil, is there are many people who lack courage. They are letting things be said. You know, what happens when people are out there saying things that aren't true or aren't kind? Are you just going to let it go? You need to counter that with courage and speak what is true in a way that comes across as loving, respectful, kind, delivered in the right way. And you need to have the courage to do that. And so this is really the undercurrent and the main motif of the book. Speak up. Please speak up. We need you.
Is there the book is written in such a captivating way because each chapter is full of little maybe phrases or examples of, you know, the kinds of communication styles or, you know, inappropriate ways in which to do that, which I'm assuming that you probably collected over the years as a pastor and a counselor and, you know, marriage counselor, that, you know, you've seen examples of all of these, that, or were they just a boilerplate you found someplace and said, yeah, this is exactly the world in which we live in today?
No, that question was asked to me by one of my employees, and I said, actually, no, these I didn't intend to come up with 80 different nuances that explain why we don't do those four things. But, yeah, I think this is, you know, I just remember stories. And I also, this information came to me when I was in college in chapel at Wheaton, where I heard someone say, you know, they quoted, it was Socrates that said three of these four. And I've added one because I thought I did the first three and realized there was a fourth one that I was not doing that was undermining my effectiveness as a communicator. But I didn't intend to get into it, but as I got, well, this is a nuance here. It just all came to me. And through my years of experience as a pastor and my own faux pas things, you know, as I kind of say, I probably have violated every one of these at one time or another. And so, but all of us have, some of us more than others, but it comes out of my life experience. And actually, you know, I have a master's in communication, and I never intended, quote, to become the marriage expert. I was meditating on Ephesians 5:33, and I saw some things in that text on marriage that wasn't being addressed, and I just felt as a Bible teacher who studied the Bible 30 hours a week for nearly 20 years that I had a responsibility to communicate something that I think had been removed from the marital radar screen. But basically, male and female communication, or just communication in general, has always been an area of it's just who I am. It's because I, you know, years ago, I remember saying, you know, I know what I mean, I just can't say it. This person said, if you can't say it, you don't know what you mean. And I used to struggle, you know, and so someone said, you need to try to write it down. Write it down on paper first so that you know what it is that you're trying to say here. So I think this all comes out of my own struggles, my own struggle to communicate, because it doesn't come natural. But the thing I want to say to those listening, it doesn't come natural to anybody. And as I pointed out, Neil, you are extremely gracious. Your word choice, people listen to you, I'm sure, just love the way, you know, we would call you silver tongue. But you would be an individual to say, no, it takes work. I've got to think before I speak. There is a word that I want to use here. I don't want to say it this way. And there's a graciousness that you develop over the years, which then makes it inviting. And one of the points I make is everybody needs to ask themselves, who are the people that you've turned to in the past when you were hurting? Or who are the people, what was the school teacher, who influenced you in school? And it wasn't the smart school teacher, it was the person who showed that they cared about you, who believed in you. There's so much more to influence than just knowledge. It's the demeanor of the individual. It's how they come across. It's the question they ask rather than the arrogant statements they're making. It's the, you know, I learned years ago, there's this kid that was made the president of his senior class, and they were doing an interview, the newspaper. Why was he the smartest kid in the class? No, they said, no, he's really struggling in Spanish. Is he the quarterback? No, he can't even run straight without stumbling. Was he very good looking? No, he's kind of homely. And they said, well, why did you make him the student council president or whatever? And they all looked at themselves with a little bafflement, and then they all said, it's because he's excited for us when we succeed. Wow. I remember hearing that thinking, whoa. And so the person out there who's thinking, well, I don't have a lot to say, you don't have to say a lot. It's who you are that's going to influence people. It's the question you ask. It's the way in which you come across. And when you use this checklist of things that I'm saying, the influence that you can have can be immeasurable. And you don't have to be this gifted communicator. You can just be happy for others when they succeed.
Well, Emerson Eggerich is an internationally celebrated communications expert, speaking on the topic of male-female relationships, and author of the bestseller Love and Respect. And the new book has a lot to say to us about our relationships in general, not just in marriage, but in every other way. We're talking Before You Hit Send, Preventing Headache and Heartache. It's the latest book from Emerson Eggerich. We do have some copies to give away, and I invite you to sign up for the drawing. We'll do an email drawing. You can go to myfaithradio.com, click on the Connecting Faith show page, and then just use the email tab there. Send us your contact info. We'll put you in for the drawing. And coming up in a moment, we're going to talk more with Emerson. We'll get some discussion about what should we do after sending an email we should never have sent. And we'll talk about the value of confessing. All that just ahead on Connecting Faith.
Give me words to speak, let my spirit sleep. I can't think of anything.
You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we've been spending some time today with Emerson Eggerichs talking about his new book. He, of course, is a best-selling author of the book Love and Respect, and he and his wife have developed and share the Love and Respect marriage conferences around the country. He's written a number of books. His latest is it's just practical, helpful, really insightful information for us living in the social media age in which we live. If you've ever had that experience where you hit send too soon without thinking, this book will really help you. But really not just in social media. This is going to help you in individual communication in person or on the phone or in any other way. Before you hit send, the book we're referencing, you know, it occurred to me as I was looking through the book, Emerson, and maybe shouldn't have surprised me, that you start out each chapter with just a list of verses. And I guess we shouldn't be surprised that the Bible has a lot to say about, you know, how we communicate. It probably is a good argument that if we read the Bible every day, we might do a little better in this area.
Well, exactly. I mean, this is why this is deep in my own heart, because I realized that there are some overarching themes in Scripture that are very, very important. And we know Satan is a liar, and Jesus says it comes out of his nature. The first disciplinary action was Ananias and Sapphira, the husband and wife who lied. They sold a piece of property saying it was for this price when it was really another price, and they lied to the Holy Spirit. Truthfulness, God doesn't lie. I mean, we know, you know, we quote, as we did earlier, speak the truth in love. I mean, that is one of those verses that just flows from our lips in the church. We know that. There's some verses, like John 3:16, that just stick. And two of the four concepts is truth and kindness. That is that which I'm about to say true? And is that which I'm about to say going to sound and feel kind, whether it's in writing or whether it's over the phone? I mean, it's a very simple thing, but I have to remind myself of this, because if I'm trying to make the case, you know, maybe I'm not as self-incriminating when I write the email. I don't want to make a quick confession about what I did wrong. I just want to be accusatory, and so that somehow we expect everybody else to be mature around us and allow me to be immature, or I'm going to motivate them to be positive on the heels of my negativity. And it just doesn't work that way. So I have to remind myself, is this true? Is it kind? And there's two more that I won't give away at this point, because we talk about it in the book. But going through that checklist is so very, very helpful. And it's rooted in Scripture. That's why this comes out of it. I thought, wow, you know, this is so pervasive. It isn't just a proof texting. This is a dominant set of themes in the Scripture, and it's been very helpful to me over the years, very helpful. I mean, those listening, if you have high school kids, I have a vision for this book being put in the hands of every high school student in America, particularly among the Christian schools. And I would love for those listening to consider, because these kids are inheriting a digital world that the world literally is at their fingertips. They can send an email that's in Pakistan, it's in Afghanistan, it's in South Africa, it's in, you know, Timbuktu. It's going to be all over the world. We have 2.2 million people following us on Facebook, and it's from all over the world. I mean, I get letters, I get notes, comments from people all over. I'm sitting in my home in West Michigan, and we're reaching the world now. You know, my son and I he's a clinical psychologist, Jonathan. We did 125 podcasts. We've had over 2 million downloads. And, you know, you just sit in your home and around the world. So these kids are going to be inheriting a world where all they have to do is hit something. And I think of a story I talk about, the person who applied for a job at Cisco and was complaining on Facebook, now I got to drive 40 minutes, but the money's good, but I don't know how I'm going to really do this. And they were whining and complaining, and within minutes they received an email from an employee at Cisco, said, we are quite sophisticated here at Cisco on the Internet. And we would like to know who your hiring manager is, because we believe they want to know the information you've just stated here. And the person didn't get the job. There is a price to pay now. We've seen athletes. We've seen movie stars. I mean, ongoing, people are making comments, and you think to yourself, why are they doing that? And I think there is a check now, and I think there's going to be a correction of this. People are getting themselves into serious problems because of their mouths.
So, Emerson, what should we do if we send an email or a text that we never should have sent? Is there one step or two that we can take?
This is the thing that's so beautiful about America. People are forgiving. And one of the points I make is look, okay, we hit sin and we knew we shouldn't. We were in a state of anger. And one of the big issues is when we're angry. That's when I need to be most guarded. Somebody, and you know, and I find this in myself. If I get five A's in a class, I get five A's in school and I get one D, what do I fixate on? The one D. And I can get an email from somebody and they say three or four positive things, but they say one thing that seems questionable to me, and I fixate on that. Oh, they're sandwiching all these compliments in. They're really trying to, you know, smack me, you know, verbally here. This is really why they've written. And this happened when I was in college. A fellow and I had talked about, you know, Christ leading us and so on and so forth, and he quoted a psalm about, you know, the Lord will have his hand upon you, his eye upon you. Do not be like the mule and the horse that need bit and bridle, but the Lord will guide you as you seek him, kind of a thing. Well, I thought he was sending me that verse to tell me that I was a dumb donkey. And I went to him, and I was so upset. I can't believe you think I was a donkey after I told you what I was going through. He said, I was saying the Lord has his hand upon you. He will guide you. He will counsel you. And I was humiliated that I read into that email a negative message that he didn't intend. And this is the mistake that we all make. So then when we do that, what should we do to your question? We just need to seek forgiveness. Don't justify it. Don't say, if you hadn't said it this way, I wouldn't have reacted this way. Stay away from any blame placing. Just get humble and say, I'm sorry, I overspoke. You know, every person has made this mistake. They're going to be empathetic. Very few people are unforgiving if they sense humility. And if they are unforgiving, then they got deeper issues than you do. Point is, recover quickly. Jesus said, if you know your brother has something against you, leave your gift at the altar and go and be reconciled. Proverbs talks about that. Go quickly. Go quickly. Seek forgiveness. So the beautiful thing here is, even if you've blown it, it can be a new day and just seek forgiveness. The best way of doing it is personal, but if you can't, then whatever form you sent that message in, send an apology note if it's an email or call them on the phone. The beautiful thing is we are a very forgiving culture.
You know, thinking about that, just as you said, they go quickly. But the fact is that this form of social media, it's instantaneous. And so we can quickly confess and hopefully right the wrongs. We don't have to, it's not like we have to send a letter that's going to take 3 weeks to arrive.
The slow boat to China.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing time. I mean, my daughter now is living in Paris, France, and we FaceTime. I mean, you know, it's just natural. We just, you know, it's just an incredible day. So even though there are a lot of downsides to the social media, it's a neutral arena, and we can use it to this very point. You can reconcile immediately, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. But the person out there who has been guilt-tripped through this, don't be guilt-tripped. Just seek forgiveness in humility, and watch what happens. It's a beautiful thing.
Well, I mean, this we've talked about avoiding preventing headache and heartache, but I mean, as you said, this is something that can strengthen relationships as well, right? So I mean, this is an opportunity for us to really have a positive impact on someone through this gift of social media.
Well, people say, you know, people are all looking at their iPhones and not communicating and so on and so forth with each other interpersonally, and there's some truth to that. But they're on their iPhones because they're communicating with somebody. And I think the beautiful thing here is that we have an opportunity as a culture to become credible communicators. I think we've dropped a little bit with our civility. I think there will be a correction of this. I think people realize that old-fashioned may be old, but it's still not out of fashion. And there are certain things you just cannot violate. And the reason, and I point this out in each of the chapters, the reason we know this is true, because you see, I don't want someone to lie to me. I don't want them to be unkind to me. So it's the golden rule of communication. These four things, we all demand other people to treat us this way. But you know, what's interesting to me, just a real sidebar comment, Stanford University has a genius professor on communication. He's done great research on this. And he said, you know, basically you have to say what's true. And there were people who criticized him. Well, yeah, we expect people to speak to us what's true, but we reserve the right to not speak what's true to other people. And this was from an academic, and the academics were saying, hey, if I want to lie to you, I can, but don't you lie to me. And I'm pointing out, this is the epitome of hypocrisy. It won't sell. People don't believe that line. They believe the golden rule. that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And if you don't want me, if I don't want you to lie to me, then I mustn't lie to you. And so if I'm a hypocrite, at some point there's a price to pay in that. But the beautiful thing here is I think there'll be a correction. I think the communication that's going on and all the technology that we have, if people begin to apply this, they will become effective, they'll be influential, they'll be credible, they'll have a great reputation, they'll touch hearts, they will move the kingdom of Christ forward in a very meaningful way. This is why I'm excited about the book. Hit send. Do these four things. Hit send.
You'll find it great information, well-researched and easy reading, and a lot of takeaway applications, and that comes down to what Emerson has been sharing and writing about for years, love and respect. There's definitely a connection there. Check it out, Hit Send, the Emerson Eggerichs' new book. We do have some copies that we'll give away here at the end of the show, so you can sign up for that online at myfaithradio.com. Emerson Eggerichs is a communications expert and, of course, founder and president of Love and Respect Ministries. Glad to have spent some time with him again today. Emerson, always good to talk with you, and thank you for this wonderful new resource, and blessings to you as you continue encouraging us in our communication.
Well, thank you, Neil, and I know that all your audience knows that if they get this book, that Neil himself applies these four things every day.
Yeah, well, especially that part where I send back a note and say sorry, and do, you know, confession's good for the soul. A lot, there's way too much of that. But anyway, Emerson, good to visit with you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Neil.
In your neighborhood, at your workplace, and in your community, God can use you to be a light for Him. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas, and Shannon Perry says living consistently is key to shining Christ's light.
Our ministry starts with those closest around us. You know, I always tell the ladies, we are to be the same people in church that we are at the grocery store. We're to be the same people in church as we are at home.
And no matter when or where, you can have a ministry.
To think that, oh, until I get to this certain place to have a ministry, listen, that's where God grows. The best ministries is in the smaller places where we think, oh, these are so small, I don't really have a significance. Let me tell you something. The one person that you touch is the most significant. It is not about touching the masses. It is about touching heart after heart after heart.
Do you want to learn more? Go to makingyourlifecount.com.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Connecting Faith today. I hope you appreciate the comments of Emerson Eggerichs. And Ted, I guess, like many of us, need to be reminded again about, you know, watch what we say and how we say it.
Yeah, so. We do. It's easy to fall into little habits that we're not even aware of and just shooting things out without thinking. So a great reminder from him today.
Well, speaking of sending things out, you can do this thoughtfully. You know, all our programming is shareable. When you go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page, you'll find this interview posted there, and you can click it. Share it with a friend.
That's right. Use Twitter for that, or Instagram, anything. The links are available for you to use and get the word out about something you hear, any of the shows we do.
If you're into social media, this is a good positive use of social media. And
that's right.
By the way, you may be listening on the Faith Radio Network app.
Yeah,
that's
right.
And more people are doing that all the time.
It's a free resource. You can go to myfaithradio.com, find directions there on how to do it easily, though. You can just go to Google Play, search for Faith Radio Network, or iTunes, Faith Radio Network. Just search for that, and you'll find our app for free.
Hey, we do want to say a special welcome, too, to listeners in the Bismarck Mandan area listening on 89.1 FM. Not everybody listens on the app.
That's right, yes. You can listen on the radio. And we want to send you a free welcome packet. Find that also at the website, myfaithradio.com.
So welcome aboard if you've just found us in central North Dakota at 89.1 FM in Bismarck. Of course, we'd love to hear from you anytime. Go to myfaithradio.com and connect with us. Tomorrow, Joe Bender on the show talks with Becky Harling. She's going to talk about listening. So I guess probably we should listen.
What? No, okay, I'll listen. Thank you.
Tomorrow, I'm Connecting Faith. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.